Welcome to the CineScare podcast. I am one of your hosts, Matt Speak.
And I am also one of your hosts, Joe Jans, but my friends call me Vicky.
And with us, as always, is super fan Mark Piscati.
I'm back. It's me. Hi.
And of course, once more, we are without our fourth partner, and that is Mr. Jimmy O. James Oster. He's going to be taking a little break from the show for a little bit, but he will be back soon. I talked to him this weekend, and he's hoping to be back within the next month or so. So we'd love to have him back. We miss you, Jimmy. But I'll see him this weekend, because this weekend CineScare podcast is going to be at the Halloween 45 Years of Terror convention in Pasadena at the Pasadena Convention Center. We're going to have a booth there. We're going to be handing out, Jimmy and I will be handing out stickers, handing out postcards. We'll be promoting the show. We also will be joined by Mr. Vincent DeSanti, and he is the writer-director of the Never Hike Alone movies. He will be there as well, and I believe he plans to show an exclusive, never-before-seen footage of Never Hike Alone Part 2. So we'll see what we wind up with, but he'll be there probably both days for most of the day. So I've been working out the details with him this last couple of days, and it's looking good. So, and of course, Jimmy O will be there as well. So come on by and say hello if you are in the Los Angeles and or Pasadena area. Make an effort to come out, because there are two horror conventions. I don't know why they planned it this way, but there's two horror conventions this weekend. HorrorCon, which is in Los Angeles, in a convention center in downtown Los Angeles. And then there's the Halloween 45. And I looked at HorrorCon, and I don't know if things have changed, but their guest list is not great. Like, I was looking it up, and there's a lot of, not much there. And Halloween has tons of people. Everybody who's ever been in a Halloween movie seems like is going to be there, except for Jamie Lee Curtis. It's going to be great. All the other characters from the original Halloween, except for Donald Pleasance, obviously, they will all be there, including Nick Castle, PJ Souls, Nancy Loomis. So there's going to be quite a. And then when you look through the rest of the franchise, there's tons of people who are going to be there as well. So
Paul Rudd going to be there?
I do not think Paul Steven Rudd will be there. No.
What a stuck up.
Yeah.
I would have went if Paul Rudd was there.
My friend who was in yes, he's going to be there, Joe.
A friend of mine
who was in Halloween 6. I don't see her. I don't think she ever does these conventions, which I don't know why she wouldn't.
Your friend in Halloween 6?
She if you recall, which I know it's been 2 years, so it's impossible for you to remember this, but she was one of the friends that she winds up having sex with a guy in one of the scenes, and Paul Steven Rudd is watching.
More specific.
Well, that's the only sex in that, and the only nudity I think in that movie. But Paul Steven Rudd is watching them, I think, in a binocular or telescope or something like that.
Oh, I remember that scene.
Yeah. But she, I'm surprised she doesn't do this, because I looked and she's not on the list. And everyone else who had even the smallest part in one of the most recent movies is going to be there signing autographs for $50 a pop. So the big celebrities are like, Anthony Michael Hall, or not, is it Anthony Michael Hall?
Anthony Michael Hall.
Yeah, he's doing it $70 a signing.
No, he's worth it, though. Worth it.
And stars like that are $70. And then guys who are not like big names, like Nick Castle, they're doing it for – but they're bigger. They're $60. And then the ones that are just small parts are $50. So
I heard Donald Pleasance's autograph is like $3,000.
Yeah. Yeah, that would be hard.
But most importantly, you're going to be there, Matt. You're going to be there.
I am going to be there.
James is going to be there.
James is going to be there.
Vince is going to be there. That's going to be amazing. Anybody that listens to the Mark's show, not show up.
Be there.
Now, Mark Poflaky is not going to be there, but
I wouldn't be able to go anyways now. So
yeah, now he's got a valid excuse because he's got COVID.
You know, it seems that the timing is awfully convenient here because now he's going to say, well, I had COVID anyway. I wouldn't have been able to be there. But I bet he was licking doorknobs this whole last 2 weeks and everything to try and catch COVID. So
I work in a restaurant. I'm surprised it's finally happened to me after working in a restaurant. This is my first experience. So.
He's licking forks.
He was licking more doorknobs than normal.
than normal. Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Well, you got to test them to see if they're hot.
That's an obscene amount.
I licked the short bus window. So what can I say? We all know.
So anyway, come on out to Pasadena and see us. Come by the CineScare booth. And give us a holler. I will also be selling all of my books, actually. So I'll have enough there to sell if anybody wants to buy. But it is limited. Limited quantities because I didn't want to...
Books that you wrote, not like all of your books from your house.
No. I'm not selling my library. I'm just selling books that I wrote. That's right.
Okay.
Yeah. Are you going to sell like your like... you know, handwritten script or anything, you know, like you,
ooh.
You know,
handwritten script. What do you mean?
Oh, do you do it all on a computer? You don't do it on a typewriter or anything like that? Like Stephen King used to do.
Well,
back
typewriter's not handwritten either, but no, I do use the technology available to me today.
do you chisel your rough draft out of slate or?
Yeah.
Oh, wait, damn it. There we go.
Yeah.
There you go. Yeah.
Well, no. I was just thinking, you know, my mind flashed back to Misery, you know, with the typewriter and all that kind of stuff. It's like, oh, maybe he's got like his own like personal copy and all that. And, you know, maybe the biggest fan would show up.
No.
All right. Well, that's boring.
Yeah. And nobody would want to buy that anyway. So it's fine.
I would.
Maybe I'll sell it
to you. There you go. There's your first.
If you were there. So anyway, that's coming up. And of course we are Joe. I hope, you know, maybe we could get the Halloween, like one of the dun, 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 over this part. Cause this episode is coming out on the 29th and this, the weekend is the 1st of October. So we're in Halloween time now, Joe, according to this episode.
According to this episode.
The little da na 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 na
na. Yeah. I don't know how necessary it is because you guys do such a good job.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
It's really good. Yeah.
Spot on.
But aside from that, Joe, what have you watched anything this last couple of weeks that you care to tell the audience about?
Matt, the question isn't what did I watch, it's what didn't I watch, because that's a much, I watched tons.
Oh, nice.
That's not all good, but I watched a lot. Let's start off with a decent one. I watched a documentary called King on Screen, which is all about the Stephen King movies, or I'm sorry, Stephen King books that have been adapted into, and Mark's having a seizure already, and I haven't even gotten through it. Mark, what do you want to say?
No, I saw that. I saw it, and I was like, holy shit, I watched the trailer. It looks really funny. It looks like they have all the – never mind. You go ahead. This is your review.
I actually watched it, so I could tell you if it's any good. It was good. I'm going to read through some of the cast. Mike Flanagan, Frank Darabont, James Caan, Tom Holland was in it. Mick Garris is in it. It's a treasure trove of –
nice.
People that have been connected with his movies throughout the years. And it was entertaining. I can say that it wasn't anything new. I didn't really learn anything, but it was a very entertaining. Granted, I've probably seen more Stephen King documentaries than most, or at least about his movies. So, but I don't want that to deter anybody from watching this. It was very good. It was very insightful, very well put together. And I enjoyed it. And it actually spawned me to start thinking about other movies that they had covered that I hadn't seen, which leads me to my next film, which was 2016's Cell.
Oh, yeah.
With Samuel L. Jackson and John Cusack and Isabel Furman, which she's
that sounds so familiar.
Yeah, what, who is that?
She's from Orphan. She was a little girl.
Okay. Oh, yeah,
from
yeah.
The movie
yeah.
Orphan. Yeah.
Is she actually a little girl in this?
No, she's, I'd say, like 20s. Hmm. I mean, she plays like a normal aged person without any sort of birth defect. Cell was a neat idea that should have lasted about, I don't know, 5 or 10 minutes, but not something that should have been put into a feature length hour and a half long film. I found myself getting really bored with this film. I don't recommend it. I hate to say it. I had high expectations for it, but for me, that one was a pass.
Yeah, I didn't care for that one.
It's a great story. It's a great story, though.
Did you read the book?
I love the story. Yeah, I did.
I did too. I didn't care for the book, but
no.
And I didn't like the movie or the book. Yeah.
Okay. I haven't read the book, but now that I've seen the movie, I don't know that I even want to read the book. But next on my list, I watched Insidious: The Red Door, which is the most recent installment of the Insidious universe.
Yeah.
This was decent.
Yeah.
I guess I'd recommend it. If you like all the other Insidious movies, this one, you know, it's par for the course like everything else. Rose Byrne, Patrick Wilson, Ty Simpkins, who was the little kid that, you know, he's all grown up in this one. He's now off at art school and he's being taught by his really terrible art teacher. Oh my God. Somebody needs to report this woman to the dean, but his art teacher is trying to get him to bring out his repressed emotions and dreams and nightmares and whatnot and finally put it on paper. And that's what sort of starts this all downhill. But it's decent. There's some fairly decent jump scares in the film. The pacing is okay. It's just, it's a middle of the road recent horror film that I pretty much just watched so that I could say I checked another one off my list of 2023 horror films.
Yeah, if you're into that series, it's worth checking out for sure. It's, you know, if you like and it's as good as the last few. You know, they've all been fine. I don't think any of the movies in that series are like bad. They're just
But there's nothing in that series that's like, oh my God, have you seen that? Or, you know,
except the first
one. Honestly,
And part
part two was okay, in my opinion. I don't know that I, based on part two, that I would have made a third, but that's just me. I always feel
like weird with Patrick Wilson. It's like, is it part of The Conjuring? Is it part of Insidious? It kind of meshes. It kind of like seems all together to me.
Yeah, I agree. I get confused. Often. Yeah. Next one I watched, have you guys ever seen a movie from 2008 called Mirrors?
Yeah.
Kiefer Sutherland.
Uh-huh.
No.
I saw this one was on HBO Max. I got suckered on this one again because somebody on TikTok showed me this scene with Amy Smart. She plays his sister in this film and she's about to get into the bath and her mirror image of herself is in the mirror and decides to rip her own bottom jaw off entirely. Meanwhile, actual Amy Smart is sitting in a bathtub and you see her jaw getting ripped off of her head entirely. And that scene is awesome. I loved it. I mean, it's 2008. The special effects are a little goofy because they're trying to get into computers. But other than that, there's no real reason to watch this film. It stars Kiefer Sutherland, who's a cop who's like out on leave because he shot somebody while he was on duty. And he gets a job kind of like being a night watchman at this old rundown shopping center in New York or something. And while he's in there, there's all these mirrors throughout the building and they're kind of haunted. And the mirror image of yourself that's in there kind of makes you do, you know, they're chasing you, haunting you, making you do things to yourself. But it's a pass. for me. I don't know that I can honestly recommend that one.
Mark sounded like he liked it.
Mark, who's on mute? That Mark?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, he
I guess I'm muting myself. Jesus Christ. I went in a sneezing bit. I'm looking around for like toilet paper or like Kleenex, and I don't have anything. I'm like sweating my ass off. I need to put on the air conditioning. Yeah, no, it's a great scene. Kind of agree with Joe. I'll be back.
Okay, I'm going to move on. I got three others. The first one, there was this thing on, like I was going through HBO Max. They have these like really old shorts. There's one from 1967 called The Big Shave. It's 5 minutes long. It's a guy standing in a mirror with like an old double-edged, you know, razor, and he starts shaving himself and then never stops, and he keeps shaving his face deeper and deeper, and there's just blood all over the place. 5 minutes long, not a huge commitment, might as well watch it. It was kind of neat
because during Shocktober there's always like one day of the month that I just don't have time to watch a full-length movie, so I'd watch a few shorts just to
there you go background. There's yeah. There's a handful of them on HBO Max. So, yeah,
that's good.
Take a look at that. The last two I had was, speaking of HBO Max, I decided to watch THX 1138 again. You ever seen it?
No.
No? George no. Lucas's first film in college.
Right. Robert Duvall. I never watched it.
No. This is from 1971. I mean, anybody that is a fan of Star Wars, you watch this, you're going to see a lot of special effects and hear a lot of sound effects that eventually became Star Wars. But the reason I'm even bringing this up is, number one, it also stars Donald Pleasance along with Robert Duvall, who's the lead. Mm-hmm. But something I thought was odd that I never realized before is Sid Haig is in that film.
Oh, no, I didn't know that.
I didn't either. I started watching it, and all of a sudden I saw Sid Haig's name come up on the introductory credits. And
is he recognizable?
He is. There's a scene where they're all in like a holding container. You know, they're all basically in whatever THX's jail is. Mm-hmm. And tries raping a girl. And then she, you know, breaks free and yells at him, and he sort of wanders off. He's not on stage very much. Or not on screen, but he is recognizable. He is in it. And then, of course, I saved this one for last. I watched Venus.
Right.
Based off of your recommendation. Horror invades the concrete corridors of a cursed apartment complex on the outskirts of Madrid. Mark, did you watch this too or no?
No.
Okay. You said another one that Matt and I watched.
He was going to watch it on Sunday, he said. But
yeah, I did.
I got to say, I really did enjoy this. I couldn't figure out where they were going or where the horror element was trying to come in. But once I found it, it was great. I love the character design that you happen upon in a bathroom or in her bathroom.
Oh, yeah. That was so amazing.
That was made the entire movie worthwhile. However, my biggest complaint is the ending. I thought it was dumb. It's like we had this great buildup and I was starting to get the payoff of this film. And it's just like the last line that comes out of her mouth and how it ends. I just like thought that was so anticlimactic, like sucked all the air out of me watching it. So the first part of it, I really liked, but just that last bit. Yeah. Not a fan. Although I did like the song that played afterwards. It's not in English. I don't know what it is. Couldn't tell you. I got it on my phone, but so that's the chunk of stuff that I watched.
All righty. Mark, did you watch anything?
Yeah, I saw A Haunting in Venice. Thought it was going to be a horror film because there's the word haunting in it, and the cast looked great. And I saw the trailer. Yeah, I didn't really realize that until I was in the movie theater and written by.
Well, you know, this is the third of three movies.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
And they were all Agatha Christie.
Yeah, I didn't know that. I just saw A Haunting. I saw the trailer. It's like, oh, that looks cool. You know, I like Kenneth. Yeah.
How was
yeah.
Tina Fey in it?
Gorgeous. Yeah. Really stunning. Actually played it really straight, which was really enjoyable to watch her do that. It does ramp up. I mean, it might scare your grandma if, you know, because that's basically who watches these films. But I guess this film actually did really well.
My grandma's passed, but, you know.
Mine too. but actually it was a fun, it was a really good movie. I enjoyed myself. I know I enjoy a movie when the popcorn is not even halfway gone. I just, you know, stop eating the popcorn. I'm like enthralled. It was fun. Like right when he locks the, you know, the doors to the house and doesn't let everybody leave, that's when it really ramps up. And there's a really good seance scene. And, you know, everyone's seen a seance scene, but this one's done a little bit differently. And Michelle Yao does a great job. Great job. So, I mean, it's an interesting, excuse me, seance scene. So, but it's definitely worth seeing. I don't know if I would go to, you know, I enjoyed, I thought it was worth the full price admission. So yeah, go see it, you know, support A Haunting in Venice. I watched some films, but I'll talk about that later after when I do a pick. At the end of the show, I don't want to ruin the pick. I had to do research.
Okay. All right.
We're on. We're officially on Pins and Needles.
We're okay. Officially on Pins and Needles.
A lot of Corey Haim, man.
Let's see. I watched we watched a documentary called The Unbinding, and it's sort of a ghost hunter kind of show. It's not really a. It's, you know, it's like Ghost Adventures or one of those shows. It's not great. I'm not, if you're into that kind of thing, I guess you might like it, but I struggled to even get through it. I think Michelle liked it more than I did, but I thought it was kind of dumb. It's about an object that some people found that is supposedly haunted. And so it was sent to these people who do paranormal research, and I didn't find anything creepy about it at all. So, and then I also watched, I guess the only other thing I watched was Venus, and I loved Venus. I thought it was fantastic. It's about a club dancer who tries to steal a bunch of drugs from her. They're not a pimp, but whoever owns the club. She's not a, it's not a stripper, but it's, you know, it's like go-go dancer at a
go-go
club.
Go-go dancer.
Yeah. And so she steals some drugs from this guy and gets chased, and she has to run to her sister's apartment building. And there's something going on in this building, like a kind of like a haunting, or is it like a, you know, but it's very Lovecraftian. It has a Lovecraftian storyline to it. It kind of reminded me a bit of Lords of Salem in the way it unfolds too, with the cult and the women who are involved in the cult. It definitely has a Lords of Salem vibe to it. Those women reminded me a lot of the witches that were in the apartment next to Rob Zombie. What's her name? Sherry Moon Zombie's apartment. It reminded me a lot of that.
We all enjoyed Lords of Salem when we reviewed that film.
Yeah,
we did. Our favorite one, actually.
Yeah.
That was a good movie.
Yeah, it's probably my favorite Rob Zombie movie. Yeah.
I was going to say, I got kind of a Rosemary's Baby vibe.
Yeah, a little bit. Yeah. It had
just, you know, strange things going on in the apartment building.
Right. And this group of sort of like witches, they're trying to summon this demon, and it's very Lovecraftian. It's a total Lovecraftian story. But there's also this other element that has this, you know, these guy, this cartel or some kind of underworld gang is after her, trying to, because she's got millions of dollars of some kind of pill, a blue pill. I'm not sure what it is, but it's millions of dollars worth. Like, she stole pounds of it and in a big duffel bag. And so they're looking for her because it's not just, you know,
it's probably Viagra.
Yeah, she didn't just steal a little bit. It was quite a bit. And so that element goes into it as well, as they're trying to find her and they try to track her down to this building. By the end, all of these things sort of come together and converge. And I liked the ending a lot more than Joe did. So I kind of loved the ending, actually, which shouldn't shock anybody that we had different takes on that. But
I'm going to have to see this movie.
I was with you till the end. Yeah, Mark, you should see it. We
both recommended that you see it.
I got time.
Yeah.
You sure do.
And no excuse. Flaky.
Fuck.
Well, but that's all I watched that was non-theme related. So, Mr. Joe Jans, it is your pick. So, tell us about your pick and take us through.
Can we do an applause for Joe's pick? By the way,
first word.
Can we just do an applause? Like, put an applause down, you know, for Joe's pick.
Let's see. Ooh. Oh, that's perfect.
Wow. That's the best applause you can muster.
Yeah.
Absolute zero. That's the theme. There you go.
A smattering of applause.
I'd like to thank both of you. Absolute zero is the theme for this episode. I decided some crap movies need some love too. These are all films that have received a zero on Rotten Tomatoes, and we're going to start off with the ultimate classic, One Missed Call from 2008, starring the illustrious Ed Burns as Captain Jack Andrews. Margaret Cho is in this movie. Can one of you guys tell me why Margaret Cho is in this film?
She's a horrible actress.
Yeah,
she's horrible.
She was like the worst. She plays an excellent bubbling cop, but she has no business being in this film. Several people start receiving voicemails from their future selves and their messages, which include the date and the time that they're going to die. And this is yet another reason why nobody should be on Boost Mobile, because everybody in this film was. So, Matt, what did you think about this soon-to-be cult classic film?
Oh, this was horrible. And by the way, this year you've given bad movies more love than we are caught up on love for bad movies.
Have I reached my quota yet?
You've reached your quota and then some.
Have I reached my quota?
Yeah.
I pick bad movies on purpose. You pick bad movies because you're Mark.
Yeah. you make mistakes. Yeah, it's a horrible Final Destination ripoff kind of thing. Acting in this is terrible. I've never been a big Edward Burns fan, but I don't know why the hell he's in that movie. I mean, he's known for doing more serious work, and I'm not a big fan of his. He kind of annoys me a little bit, but
shit. Edward Burns, he annoys you? Really?
Yeah, I just never been a big fan of him.
Oh, really?
That's review, yeah.
I love him.
Yeah, I can't think of something I like him in.
Yeah.
Saving Private Ryan? He's great in that.
He's kind of a dick in that.
Yeah, I didn't care for him in that either.
What, there's not dicks in fucking war?
And I just didn't care for him.
Brothers McMullen?
I really didn't. No, I hate that
Never
movie.
Saw it.
God, I hate that movie. Fuck. I don't understand what the hell's going on in this movie. At some point I wrote, it's not your imagination.
Do you need me to explain it to you?
Yeah, right. it's not your imagination. I wrote that. I don't know what that's supposed to mean, but something, it must've been something somebody said. So they go
was it
to
the really bad CGI millipedes that were crawling all over people. Was that
it could be
what you were referring?
Yeah. At some point, they go to an old age home to look for a woman that I don't remember what her relationship. I was really struggling to even pay attention.
It was a foster's home, I thought.
No, it was an old age home, and there was a baby crying. And I'm like, why? If it's an old age home, why would there be a baby crying? And it just seemed like they took background sound effects from apartment buildings, which normally maybe has a baby crying in them. Yeah.
Maybe it was an old baby.
God damn it, Joe. The inhaler jump scare was ridiculous. The lady's standing there, and all of a sudden you hear an inhaler go off, and it's supposed to be a jump scare, and the way it was...
Oh, my God!
Yeah. It was terrible. I'm like, for God's sake, I've never seen an inhaler be a jump scare.
I jumped.
Then there's this...
I did.
You and Edward Burns. Yeah. Let's see. So they're leaving the apartment. They're leaving this building, and Edward Burns says to the girl, I'm not leaving you out of my sight for a second. And she says, no, let's split up. And he's like, okay. The dialogue in this was just like that. She sees a creepy woman as they're driving off. She sees a creepy woman standing behind the little girl, and she doesn't mention it. She doesn't say, oh my God, I just saw, anybody would do that. If you're driving off and you see a creepy old ghost woman standing behind a child, you're not going to just keep driving like, oh, don't worry. I thought I saw something. She didn't even mention it, and they just drive off.
I would probably pick up my Boost mobile call, phone, and just give them a call about it.
It happened throughout the whole entire movie, Matt.
Yeah.
The whole entire movie.
Yeah. There was a lot of stuff that no one was talking about. Like,
yeah.
What the hell? It made no sense. There was like a, I don't know if it was CGI, but it sure looks CGI. Cabbage Patch Kid looking kid in a crib with a phone.
It was so bad.
I didn't mind the seat in the crawl space. I think it could have, if there was a more talented director, it could have been done better. Kind of like it reminded me a little bit of that scene of, obviously this movie came out before it, but it reminded me of that scene in what's the movie where the guy is supposed to be house sitting, taking care of a girl with schizophrenia, and he had to be chained so he couldn't go into certain rooms? Do you remember the movie that we saw a couple years ago?
Mark couldn't pronounce it. I know it doesn't narrow it down.
Oh, that's right.
Caveat.
Yes.
And, caveat. That's what I said. I said it perfectly.
Caveat.
Dick Cavett.
It reminded me of that scene, except it wasn't as well done. Like in the scene where he was hiding, and then there's a dead body there, and he keeps looking over at it, and it was similar. I knew that body. I knew the body in this crawl space in this movie was going to do something, obviously, but I thought that was pretty effective.
Yeah.
But overall, yeah, this was dumb. I gave this. Somehow though, Joe, I don't think any of these movies were as bad as the Corey, movies. I'm pretty sure anyway. But I gave this
agreed.
Yeah.
I agree with that too.
Yeah.
Except Corbin Nash.
Oh no. I thought Corbin Nash was worse than any of these.
Want to watch Corbin Nash again.
No. I gave this one 1.5 stars. So,
all right, that's something. Mark, you're up.
Yeah, this wasn't too bad. Yeah, in my opinion, I didn't think it was too bad. I mean, it's a cross between The Ring and a Final Destination, in my opinion. That's what I got out of it. They're copying off. They just made this 2008 film. They did a little mishmash, with the boyfriend that was walking across the street and then came back. I put my foot up. I'm sorry. Anybody getting hit by cars, that random thing, that was a complete Final Destination, moment. Even the beginning opening credit music had a little Final Destination vibe. That I just kept going, ooh, that sounds like Final Destination. All considering, it's not a bad film. it had some jump scares. The inhaler got me.
oh my God.
It did. I'm sorry, it did. Jeez. The goddamn P peepholes in this fucking film. And you know me,
Mark's got a thing against peepholes.
Yeah. I don't have a thing against them. They just scare the shit out of me.
Sticking things in holes.
Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So at the very beginning, you know, with the little peephole at the party and she's going up, it's like, why doesn't she just open up? There's like tons of people there, but she's like peeping up. So it's like alluding what's going to happen at the end of the film, obviously. A little cheap or whatever, but there was a couple of peephole moments. I'm just going, oh my God. And then, of course, at the end, Edward Burns decides to go up and look at the peephole, and you know something's going to happen. And I was, excuse me, I was surprised that it was a knife going through the peephole instead of something else. That was just a little weird. But at the end of the film, with the little kid and the asthma breathing, I thought it was a little scary. I thought that was pretty well done.
I think that was my biggest problem with this film, is that this whole horror film is predicated upon an asthma attack. I mean, if you dig down to the very beginning, this is all because some little girl had an asthma attack, and now we're trying to increase the lion's share of cell phones with Boost Mobile. It was dumb.
Yeah.
I got a question. You talked about that party at the beginning.
Yeah.
Like toward almost very beginning of the film. What kind of party was that? Did you see it was like high school or college, you know, like just kids college. Hanging out?
It was a college age party. Kids hanging out.
Okay. What college party starts off with some people cooking a full meal?
Yeah. Yeah, I
mean, they're like shucking peas, and it looks like she was baking a lasagna. I'm like, what college party comes with a, you know, like a 7-course dinner? It's right. Ridiculous.
Ripping she's like making a salad, ripping the romaine lettuce, and going out and
tap that keg and pass the cabbage.
Right. Right. Yeah. Yeah. A little boring party, but I mean, there's some hot chicks there. Who knows? Love me some Edward Burns. That's one of my notes.
Hot chicks and cold iceberg.
Yeah. Yeah. And love me some Edward Burns. I don't know. The guy, he's charismatic. I love his accent. He's just fun to watch for me. I don't know how Matt finds him annoying.
And Joe does too.
Yeah.
Yeah. He doesn't exactly get my juices flowing.
I think he's okay. But all in all, like, this was my first film I watched. So expecting, you know, zero Rotten Tomatoes, I was expecting like just god awful film. And it wasn't that bad. And then watching these films later on, I'm going to have a little thesis that I want to.
Feces?
Yeah. Theses, not feces.
Is it not long?
No, it's not long. I don't have anything written down. But I have an idea why Joe picked this. I think there's a countermeasure that Joe is trying to do here. No?
I didn't think too deeply making this. I simply looked up horror films that had a zero Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yeah,
interesting.
There's no way he was thinking past that.
Yeah.
All right.
I toiled over this list for months. That being said, I don't think it's a great movie. However, I don't think it deserves a 0% Rotten Tomatoes.
Well, this is what I'm saying. I don't think that any of these films deserve 0%. Well, I really don't.
The percent is because who does anyone recommend the movie? And in all these cases, it's a 0%, not because Rotten Tomatoes thinks it's a 0%. It's a 0% because they couldn't find anyone who recommended it.
Oh, I will agree with one film. Yeah, that deserves 0%.
I think they all do.
One film.
I can see why all of these are 0%. No. Yeah.
I thought this should have had like a 3%.
Yeah.
Out of 100.
Yeah.
If you told 3%. Me that major film critics like this movie, I'd be like, yeah, I can see why.
I'm a major film critic. I'm not saying I would recommend it, but
right. And that's what it comes down to. Would anybody recommend this? Are you going to recommend this, Mark, to people?
I recommended it to two of you. So there's three.
There's 3%.
That was more like sadistic.
It's more of a dare based on a dare.
Who dared you?
No, I dared you guys to watch it. You did. Oh. You came through. Flying colors. Way to go. We're going to move on to what was the year? What was the glorious year that this graced the screen? 1987, Jaws the Revenge, starring Lorraine Gary, Lance Guest, Mario Van Peebles, Michael Caine, Mitchell Anderson. It's just an absolute masterpiece. Chief Brody's widow believes that her family is deliberately being targeted by yet another shark in search for revenge. So, Mark, why don't you go ahead and take the helm. Steer the ship, if you will.
It's a Christmas movie. Hey, it's like Die Hard. I forgot
that is true.
I forgot this was a Christmas movie. And in my opinion, like watching this over again, like I saw this in the movie theater. I was a little let down by it. I wanted more shark kills, but you know, it was a Jaws film, and I walked out going, okay, you know, it wasn't as good as the first, wasn't good as the second or the third. You know, it was the fourth. Hoping for a fifth. Never happened. This movie killed the franchise, which is a good thing, obviously. You know, the tagline says, this time it's personal. Well, for me, when I watched this film in the theater at, I don't know how old I was in 1987. I think I was 13 at the time. But I did take it personally because I did watch these films in the theater except for Jaws and Jaws 2. So, but I saw Jaws 3 in the movie theater. And I did take it personally because I've gone on this like story arc and they kill off Sean at the very, very beginning. And very, very violently they killed Sean. And it kind of hurt. It kind of hurt. And I kind of liked how with the funeral, you know, it lets you grieve with the family and whatnot. I mean, it kind of reunited the family. I mean, you saw Miss Kittner, which was fantastic. But I have a question for you guys. You think Miss Kittner was secretly happy that Sean died?
Oh, I don't think it was a secret. There was probably a scene that was on the cutting room floor with her dancing a jig.
Yeah, it's like, you deserve this. You deserve this. It was
her revenge.
Yeah, because you knew. You knew. And it was great to see, some of the old characters from the original at the funeral. And Lance Guest from Halloween 2 and The Last Starfighter plays Michael. I don't know. It was fun. It's a fun film. It's absolutely like ridiculous. I know you guys are gonna bring up how does a shark get revenge? You know, sharks do not get revenge. In the novel, I don't know if you guys did research on this. Did you guys do research on the novel?
No.
So in the novel, there's a voodoo thing going on where they have put a spell on the shark and on Mrs. Brody. And that's why they're intertwined into this movie, which is absolutely insane.
They cut that out?
They cut that out. Also, wow. Hoagie is a drug dealer in the book. And they kind of hint on it in the film that he's a drug smuggler. But yeah, it's just crazy, like how this film was even made, and how it even exists. I love Michael Caine in this. He's just getting a house, and yeah, it's a fun film. I'll let you guys pop off on this.
Matt, go ahead. It's all teed up for you.
This is kind of fun. It's got, you know, it's dumb. Terrible movie, but it's correct. It's got, you know, it's fun. You know, seeing Mrs. Brody dancing in Jamaica to music that doesn't sound like it's Jamaican at all is hilarious. It's like
kind of like Mario Van Peebles' accent,
right? Yeah. And then at the beginning, what Michael, it looks like, or no, Sean, sorry. Sean, it looks like his arm is under his raincoat after the shark has eaten it off. Like, it looks like yep. they're still, it's just they put it under the raincoat with hardly any effort to make it look like it was actually still ripped off. And that boat was not seaworthy at all. It went down very quickly. I'm like, man, that the shark did him a favor. It was good to see some of the old characters. That woman who works in the town that was there. I don't think that's funny in the original one.
I don't think that's funny at all.
Yeah. That was, and then of course the mom who looks like she should be his grandmother.
That is Fritzy Jane Courtney. She plays Mrs. Taft.
Quick question. Was the secretary in the sheriff's office, was that the same actress from the original?
No.
It wasn't. I didn't think so.
They're karate that was great, though. Chopping
picket fence.
Yeah. I wish they'd brought her back. And the guy who was like, oh, I'm just out here trying to get some sun. That old guy that he's trying to get out.
He was in it. He oh, was in it. Yeah, he was. He was at the funeral. He was at the funeral.
Okay. I must have missed him. And then the little kid, the her grandson, he's got he's like a killjoy. He says, Uncle Sean is dead, you know. Like out of the nowhere, there was no reason for him to say that. Mario Van Peebles has a worse Jamaican accent than me.
I'd like to hear it.
Yeah, man. And that was about the level of his
believable.
Jamaican.
Yeah.
The shark is as scary as Jabberjaw.
Jabberjaw.
That was good.
Pretty sure you get the bends rising to the surface that fast. At some point, yeah. He like shoots up. He would not survive that.
I gave a pass on that because there was bubbles coming out of his mask. So he was like, I thought. I gave a pass on it.
There's a line where Mario Van Peebles says, get to the point, man, as my wife now says. And I'm like, I don't. That's the worst line.
That was his dad, yeah.
And the sky in the last scenes is so awful. They just barely tried to do it. You could tell they had to do reshoots. They couldn't go back out to the ocean, so they went to the Universal lot, which if you've ever been out here to the Universal Studios backlot tour, there is a giant water tank, basically. It's like a lake on the backlot, and they have a huge like backdrop next to it. So they can make it look like the ocean, and there's tons of ocean scenes that are done there, but normally they're lit and painted back there way better. In fact, the last scene from that Jim Carrey movie where he's being watched,
the Truman Show.
Truman Show, where he walks off, that's done there. But
that would be the Truman Show.
Yeah, it's obvious they painted that like to look like sky. It didn't match the scenes before. It was just awful. It's a classic bad movie, but it's so goofy and it's so like just silly, basically, with Mrs. Brody dancing and everything, and she just, her hair is hilarious.
That was the style, man. That was the style back then.
I guess so.
My mom had that haircut.
Yeah. But it's definitely worth checking out, I guess, if you're up for a bad movie. It's a good bad movie to watch, which I don't think any of the rest of these are. And I will touch on that later after watching one of the others. I did make a couple notes about that. I'll get to that then. But this one is a good bad movie to watch.
Joe, what do
you
think?
So you wouldn't think it would get a 0%.
Oh, I totally understand why it would be a 0%, sure. But like in the grand tradition of bad 80s horror movies, it's a fun one to watch, yeah. But
yeah. So bad it's good.
Now, I'm surprised in the years since that they're having, you know, because normally a lot of these movies would have been 0% for a long time, but then they come back in festivals and that kind of thing, and they get kind of a cult following. This one has not attached to, and so that cult following sometimes will get a semi-positive review from someplace like Bloody Disgusting or one of those websites, Arrow in the Head or whatever. And so that'll give it at least a few percentage points. But the fact that this one hasn't yet is kind of unusual, because I think there's some, we've seen some 80s classic bad movies that were, you know, no better than this one. So.
I'm surprised that this doesn't have like a cult following, because there's so many ridiculous moments, and but there's so many good scenes in it. It just mishmashes. I don't understand. Like, the little girl is, I think, was absolutely adorable in this film. And I thought she was kind of a good actress for like a tiny child. I mean, she was, I think, 8 years old when this when they were filming the film. So, like, rest in peace, her.
I would like to add that I thought that attack on the banana boat was nice, you know, kind of brutal.
The shark looked fake, obviously.
Oh, no, the shark looked fake. There's just a lot of good blood in the water.
The one thing that I actually found, like, really, like, scary was the little girl, the daughter's face when the shark was coming up and the look on her face. Right. That was a horrific look on her face. And I don't know if they told her that this big mechanical shark is coming out of the water, because the look on her face, that wasn't acting. That was
very authentic.
She was petrified. Petrified.
I agree.
Yeah.
I do. You guys covered mostly everything. I just want to point out at the beginning when Ellen Brody is on the phone with Michael and Sean Brody, it keeps like trying to yell over the phone. I put on here, this family has no phone manners and talks over each other more than Mark. So that's the only note that I had. It was worth it. So, okay.
Wow.
We're going to.
You know what really sucks? Because I'm talking over you again, but you know what really sucks? But you know what really sucks is that I totally agree with you that he had no phone etiquette, and I was like, shut the fuck up. Like, you let her talk on the phone.
Let her talk.
Yeah.
And so now you know what our audience is saying as they listen to our show.
Oh, the audience is saying it. I understand.
The audience is saying. I wish Matt and Joe would shut up so Mark can talk more. That's what the audience says.
I'm sure.
All right. We're going to go camping now. We're going to go to the 2016 remake of Cabin Fever. While staying at a remote cabin for a week-long vacation, a group of five college friends succumb to an infectious flesh-eating disease. And this movie, which was made earlier by Eli Roth, remake, all it is a guy that just wanted to pay homage to a bunch of his favorite old horror movies. So, Mark, you're busy. Matt, you go right ahead.
Okay. Who was clamoring for a remake of Cabin Fever in 2016?
I can answer that question.
All right.
Nobody.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That's what I thought. Not me. Yep, not
I wasn't.
Me.
I mean, I liked the original one. I think it's fun, but yeah. I had no.
I do too.
Yeah, I'm really never clamoring for a remake anyway, unless it's a movie that should have been good and wasn't, and then remake that one, you know, and make it good. But I'm, you know, a good movie. Why does it need to be remade? Once in a while, you'll see a good one, but. And then, God damn it, when a director is named Travis Z on the credits, you know it's gonna suck.
Fuck.
They had the Shining music playing on the car ride up to the place as a overhead. It was so bad.
That's what started pissing me off beginning watching that fucking film. I'm like, are you serious? They're gonna go there?
Yeah.
Hey, have you guys seen The Shining?
Yeah.
That was awesome.
Yeah. Oh yeah, yeah. Exactly, Joe.
So good.
That's this whole movie. It's a Chris Farley interview. Yeah.
Yep, totally. Yeah. Remember The Shining?
That was great.
That was great.
Stupid.
And then they're talking to the kid in the little, I don't know, bunny mask or whatever at the gas station. And the kid bites him. And his dad comes out and yells at the kid. And the guy that got bit says, hey, it's not his fault. Wait, who else fault is it? The kid bit you. Like, you know.
It's so angry.
He provoked him, probably.
So, and then we cut to a sex scene where, once again, the guy's wearing underwear. How is this happening? I suppose if he has it pulled out or whatever, but I mean, as far as I can tell, he's just got his underwear on. What it's another naked girl, clothed guy trope. How many times have we seen this?
They got a hole in the front.
I guess. Nobody uses that goddamn hole. And
nobody.
Nobody.
There is our bumper.
Yep. There it's got a hole in the front. There we go. Beautiful.
But honestly, who
Mark
who uses
time.
Who uses the hole?
No one.
Nobody uses the
There's
hole.
Bumper There's bumper too.
Yep.
When you gotta go, you're gonna like fuck around with the hole, you know, just like try to get it out when you really gotta go. No, you just pull it down, man.
You can turn the faucet off now, Mark. We got it plenty.
When the guy's running around the woods with the gun, it kind of reminded me of Friday the 13th, Part 6. There was sort of a silliness in that scene, and I have some thoughts about this. I feel like there was a silly, very campy movie here that maybe someone was trying to make, and somebody stepped in and said, no, we got to make it serious. Because there's some moments in this that were really silly and campy and played for laughs, like the cop and all these. And I feel like either they couldn't decide whether to make it funny and campy and just a campy movie, B-movie style, or a serious, you know, it was almost like they couldn't decide whether they wanted to make it more like the latest Evil Dead, you know, not the latest one, but the, you know, the remake of Evil Dead. Like it's like they weren't sure if they want to go in that direction where it was a way more serious version of the movie, or if they wanted to make it even more campy than the original. And they kind of did both. So I don't know if the filmmaker, I didn't look it up because I really didn't care to research this movie, but I wouldn't be surprised if the director kind of wanted it to be more campy and the film company stepped in and said, no, it needs to be serious. I don't know.
I never thought I'd say this out loud, but I think the gamer dude guy really should have been played by Jamie Kennedy.
Yeah, it's that type for sure. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably Mark's favorite character.
Well, do you guys remember like the original? I mean, how campy the film was and how campy and annoying that character was.
Right.
That was not this Jamie character. Kennedy. It wasn't Jamie Kennedy. I don't know what his name was.
It could have been.
It could have been. Yeah, absolutely.
It's that type.
Yeah. Yeah. But they went straight for it. It with like kind of a straight guy, and it didn't match exactly what Matt had said. I mean, the first film is a... Go ahead, Matt. I'll wait.
And then do cabins really get their water directly from the lake like that? Because I have a feeling they don't. They'd probably need to go through some sort of processing system before it got to the sink. So even if there isn't a virus in the lake, you're going to get sick from drinking straight out of lake water. The girl who wants to go home is the only one acting logically. That all this shit's going down and they keep wanting to stay and have a good time for a while there anyway. I mean, they burn the guy, this guy that came up to them, and then they kind of, no, let's just forget. Let's just, you know, why do you want to leave? You know? It looks good. You know, all these movies, except maybe Jaws, they all look good. And that's about it. It looks, let's see, I'll skip that. And then like they're fooling around in bed, and all of a sudden they pull down the covers, and she's got this massive bloody sore. Like she wouldn't know that while she's trying to, you know, like she wouldn't know she had this sore there. Come on. It's just a mess. The burnt, they say they have to stick together. Why? It's not like a stalk. It's not like a slasher is after them, or there's a monster out there. It's a virus. Why do they need to stick together? In fact, sticking together in this situation probably would be the wrong thing to do. If one of you has it, you probably want to get away from everybody as much as you can.
Well, one of the characters did do that.
Right, he did. And he was the only smart one, but everyone else was like...
He was the only smart one because he walked away, yeah.
Right. Everyone else was like, no, we need to stick together. What? You don't need to stick together if there's a... Yeah, you need to defend yourself, but a virus is different. Oh, yeah, the burn guy came back. Shocking. How long was he waiting at that particular spot in the lake for someone to show up right there so he could jump out of the lake and do a Jason-like thing? He wants to be humane and kill the girl, and he does it by using a shovel to the mouth. That's probably the least humane way to kill somebody. What the heck? And then his alternative, next most humane, is to set her on fire. Sweet Jesus. They have a gun there. Shoot her in the head. That's, you know. I hope nobody does an absolute zero redux. God. The safety part was kind of funny, and if the rest of the movie had had that tone, it would have been great, you know, or at least better than this. You know, with the safety, and the guy says, "Oh, you got the safety on," and he says, "Oh, thank you." You know, shoots him. Let's see. Yeah, I don't know if I can forgive you, Joe, for this one. Oh, yeah. And then at the end, there's a photo of the guy hitting her in the mouth with the shovel from her point of view. How did that happen? How was that taken? That shot taken?
She had a Boost mobile phone in her
hand.
Oh,
yeah. Right.
Oh, God, Joe.
Oh, this was bad. This was probably my least favorite of all of them, maybe. So
it was my second least favorite.
Yeah. Well, it's close. Yeah, there's one other, I think, that you're probably saving to the end.
It's a dead heat, yeah.
It's a dead heat, yeah.
Yeah.
But
Mark,
again,
go ahead.
Better than any of the Corey movies. Yeah,
yes. I would watch this again over Corbin Nash.
I would,
oh,
too.
Oh, yeah, come
I would
on.
Too.
Yeah, come I would, on. Too. Come on. Joe. I was really starting to dislike you watching this film. This fucking film got me so angry because, one, I'm a big fan of Cabin Fever, the original. I rented it at Blockbuster, and I bought it right after I watched it. And I rewatched it. It was one of these horror films that I rewatched over and over and over again. There was no need for this film. No need at all. Especially so soon. And how it was so... And the fact that Eli Roth presents it at the beginning of it. Like, so he's like, yeah, green light, go for it. That pisses me off. And that just like discredits him as a director. And he's just a cash-grabbing guy. Maybe he was doing it to fund another film that he wanted to direct. Who knows? But for him to give up...
I think it was an ego thing.
Probably.
It's like, oh my God, everybody loves my stuff so much. I'm beating him off of the stick. I can't help but everybody wants to remake my wonderful content.
Yeah. They did it with Evil Dead. They did it with this, that. It's like, I'm in it. It's like, this is my thing. I'm going to, you know, sell this fucking piece of shit. Yeah, this movie just pisses me off. But my first note is The Shining with the music and the drone shot going. And I'm just like, you fuckers. It's like, who is this director? The AR rifle mishap at the beginning. Why didn't he grab that AR from his friend? Why did he just walk by after that happened? Absolutely ridiculous. But it's the same story. It's the same plot. They have some of the same lines in it. With the campfire.
It's a remake.
Oh my God. But Joe, this is, it's not even imaginative.
I'm not standing up for the film.
It's not just, even imaginative. That's why
I couldn't agree more, just stating it's a remake.
The director, and this is what I was trying to say. When Matt was on the phone and I interrupted him, this is what I'm saying is that the director decided to try to make this serious when the original film is campy. It's absolutely supposed to be campy. It's supposed to be fun. It's making fun of the horror genre. And so he goes serious with this, but then he tries to make it campy just like the original, and it just doesn't work. It doesn't work, and it just clashes nonstop against each other. Yeah, there's some shots that actually looked beautiful. But, I mean, you could do that, you know, with any kind of camera now. I mean, look at Never Hike It Alone and what Vince is doing. I mean, he's making shots just like, you know, this guy's doing. And when they're at the fireplace and they do that awesome story in the bowling alley. But in the original, they do the flashbacks of, you know, showing the bowling alley and the head rolling up, you know, as a bowling ball coming back. That was creepy. They didn't even bother. They just did the story, and that was it. With the party time sheriff, it was a guy in the original. Now it's a girl. It didn't work making it as the remake is as serious as it is. It made no sense in the film. Well, in the original, it was camp all the way through, so it did make sense. Not in the remake. And it's just trash. Absolutely trash. Hate this film. Don't watch it. 0% Rotten Tomatoes. Fuck you, Joe, for making me watch this. Not happy with you. But I'm happy always with some of your other picks.
Well, there you have it. I couldn't make that any more concise if I tried. My thoughts on this film are mostly irrelevant or have been covered. I will say that my least favorite character and most despicable character in this entire film is the big-breasted blonde Deputy Winston. It's just, that was the dumbest idea you could have possibly thrown.
Yeah, it's terrible. Yeah, terrible. Yeah. It didn't fit at all. Yeah.
No.
With the scar, with the red, horrible red scar underneath the eye.
Okay, we only got two more to go. 2016's The Disappointments Room. That's right there in the title. A mother and her young son release an unimaginable horror from the attic of their rural dream home, starring the illustrious Kate Beckinsale and some guy named Mel Rado, who I've honestly never heard of before or seen him in anything, but and Gerald McRaney. He was Judge Blackner. Was that
who?
Simon and Simon?
Was it Simon and Simon?
Yeah, Simon and Simon.
Simon, yeah.
Great intro song.
He played Simon.
No, he played Simon.
Oh, was it? Okay. All right. I'll have to go back and check.
Who did he play?
Simon.
No, it wasn't Simon. He was Simon.
Yeah.
Mark, go ahead and...
Me? You want me to go?
I don't have a whole lot of choices, but yeah, go ahead.
Yeah, okay. How the fuck did this guy land Kate Beckinsale as a wife is my first
great
note.
Point.
How? How? Who was casting this film? Because... if you're going to have Kate Beckinsale as the lead and you're going to have a husband, maybe not have a guy that looks exactly like Robert Carradine, in my opinion. He looks kind of like Revenge of the Nerds. Not an attractive guy. Now, granted, it happens. Fine. But we're talking a film, and it was absolutely jarring because Kate Beckinsale is absolutely gorgeous. And when you pit him with her, it's just distracting. It just doesn't make sense. None of that makes sense. He doesn't have a job. I think he has a job. They didn't even really explain it. Something like he was on a phone call with Japan. That's like the only time I ever heard like he had a job. When he was in the ice cream store or whatever, and their son's getting the strawberry ice cream, and she asks, the husband's going, oh, what do you do for a living? Oh, I play Xbox and basically take naps. That, like, what? Like, where did that even come from? The fact that Kate Beckinsale's hair is blonde absolutely was distracting from the plot of the film. Should say right there that this movie is not good, because all I kept on saying to him, why is her hair blonde? Why is her hair blonde? I don't know if I like her as a blonde. I like her as a brunette.
She can look more like Nicole Kidman.
That's right. From like The Others?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I didn't even think of that. That might be true. That could be a fact right there.
Because there was a couple scenes when Kate Beckinsale in the right light actually looked quite a lot like Nicole Kidman.
Yeah. I'll agree with that. Yeah.
I would theorize that was done on purpose.
Yeah. Why is she an architect? Basically just to be in this house is like how they're in the house. Why does there always have to be an architect in horror films and big houses? Doesn't make sense. And when she's at the only time, like, you know, when she says, well, I'm an architect. And then the only time you see her being an architect is she's, you know, looking at a blueprint of the house and she's just got a crayon going, no, this and that. And that's basically it. It's just a reason for them to be in this house. The lawnmower kid, why is he in it? Why are they having cigarettes? You know, is there going to be a sexual relationship? It seems like maybe there will be. Nothing happens. Nothing happens in this whole entire film. Nothing. Nothing scary happens in this film. Watching her husband and the kid's in a Wolverine little plastic Halloween costume, and he's the Hulk running around through the forest and all that. This movie made no sense to me. I was losing concentration like nonstop. Sometimes I was losing the plot, and I don't even think there really was a plot. There was a plot. The disappointment room, you hardly even fuck you, Joe.
He's at a loss for words.
You know how long it took me to pick a movie that would bring Mark to utter silence?
I know.
Yeah. I finally cheated.
No.
It's just...
If Mark had thought at all about like, oh, Joe's probably has a reason for picking the films that he did.
I was.
It was so that I could find a film that would bring Mark to silence.
Mm-hmm.
Make him speechless.
Yeah.
And I think I found it.
Yeah. Well, I'll go.
Did you guys think that this was turning into the ice cream truck?
It said some similarities. Yeah, for sure. Yeah.
With her and the young kid,
and the guy. Yeah.
Go ahead, Mark or Matt.
Okay. I usually like Kate Beckinsale, but in this one, she looks like she has no idea what's going on. And it's like, she's in a different movie from everyone else. It almost feels like a lot of her scenes that were supposed to be in the same room together, and maybe they just intercut some of her. I don't know if that's it. That's what it felt anyway. I don't know if that's actually what happened, but it was just so disjointed. And I wrote, boy, they don't make bad movies like they used to. You know, they used to make a bad movie, and at least there was some charm to it. You know, some of the bad slashers that we've watched from the 80s or whatever. These, they look great. And they look like they should be really good, but there's no personality to them. There's nothing to latch onto. And I don't think, you know, like a movie like Blood Rage or one of those movies 30 years later, you can get a cult following because there was something to latch onto. There's a little personality to them. This, no one's going to be watching this 30 years from now saying, oh, it's a really good bad movie. No, they're it's going to be forgotten, and most all of these will be, except maybe Jaws. It looks pretty good, and that's about it. There's almost nothing even worth talking about here, but I have a lot of notes. The plot is nonsensical, and the performances are bland. Kate Beckinsale acts like she thinks this movie isn't worth smudging her makeup over, and I can't say she's wrong. The whole spouse doesn't believe there's a ghost trope is so annoying, even in a good movie, let alone in a movie like this. Of course, he has to leave for 2 days. Why not? Yeah, they always have to leave for 2 days in these goddamn movies. This, and for a guy who doesn't have a job, he has to leave for 2 days? Come on. This movie's pulling out all the cliches. Someday, AI is going to make its own horror movie, and it's going. And the first attempt is going to be just like this movie. If it had been released this year, I would have thought that it was written by ChatGPT. A small town construction worker does not dress or look like that kid. A small town construction worker has dirty clothes on and an old trucker hat. That's it. They don't look like this guy. Kate Beckinsale has one facial expression in this movie, and it's like wistful, maybe. They should have cast Paul Walker opposite her. I actually liked her husband. I thought he had a little personality at least. I didn't mind him not being, you know, as good looking as her, but it's both. The whole movie is basically a series of Kate Beckinsale naps, which they should have just leaned into that and let us watch her sleep for 90 minutes. It would have been more interesting. Gerald McRaney is not scary. I don't know why they cast him in that part. These construction kid conversations are just deathly, just horrible conversations. I don't know why she was burning the painting. The montage of interconnected scenes is done. So there's like a montage of interconnected scenes where she's off doing something. I can't remember what it was. And the dad is getting ready for their dinner party. And then they don't show the dinner party. And now, from what I've read, the dinner party scene actually happened, and there's a very dramatic scene that Kate Beckinsale breaks down during this dinner party that was only shown in the U.S. theatrical version. They cut it, and it's not available in any of the new versions. Maybe they're hoping for a clamoring of people looking for that scene to be submitted. I don't know. Actually, I do know. Mark will be happy with the child killing, right? I thought maybe you'd be down with that, right?
I enjoyed that. Yeah. I did.
And then that was the end. I was like, wait a minute. What happened here? There's no
let's
ending.
Just
here.
Leave.
Yeah, let's just leave.
Let's just and, leave.
We just
paid hundreds of thousands of dollars for a house that we were going to fix up, and we're there for two weeks. And no, let's just leave.
And the final shot through the window, of course, is Simon just looking out the window. Yeah. Not even looking menacing or anything. Just looking. He's going, well, now you know. Now you know. Like, fuck off.
Yeah,
fuck
it was off. Terrible. Terrible movie.
Matt, may I say that was probably some of the best notes you have ever written on a film. That was great. That was really funny.
Thank you.
You got more?
I think that cut scene with the dinner party explains one of my questions, which was, do you guys remember in the second Final Destination movie, there was a cop that sort of teams up with these kids and is trying to figure out all that. The actor's name is Michael Landis. He's in this film. He's in the dinner party. He's one of the guests. And I'm like, he's been in plenty of things. I recognize the guy's face. Mm-hmm. I mean, granted, I had to look up his IMDb to place him, but he very recognizable. But he was in this cut of the movie for literally 8 seconds.
Wow.
And I could not figure. So at least thank you, Matt, for explaining to me that there was an actual better scene that he was utilized in.
Instead of showing that dinner party, they just decided to cut it up into this huge montage. And that was it.
They they postponed this film, by the way, after they finished it, and they postponed the release, I think, like 2 years, and then all of a sudden, like they and the I forgot what studio released this, but they went bankrupt. They went bankrupt after this.
Because of this?
Because of this or before this, but they just put it out, but they're bankrupt now.
Hmm. Wow.
The most ferocious that Kate Beckinsale was in this entire film was when she's trying to haggle with a contractor about how they're supposed to do things.
Oh, and, my God, yeah.
You know, my father was a contractor, and I used to sit by his side and haggle. It was like the dumbest contribution she had to the entire film.
Yeah.
And it wasn't much of a contribution at all.
So, this was in theaters, guys. This was in theaters.
This was in theaters 7 years ago. It wasn't that long ago.
Fuck. Yeah.
Somebody thought this was good enough to put money behind.
I never even heard of this film before.
I remember it.
I think sixth, seventh, and eighth people I'm sure that have probably ever seen it.
Probably.
Yeah. This was my least favorite out of everything we watched.
I hope you didn't enjoy it.
Oh, I hated it. It was a chore. No.
Good.
This was
good.
I don't know. It was neck and neck because the next one I didn't like very much either. So.
this last one, I'm going to say last, from 2011, is a really, really, I was just, the Kate Beckinsale movie just eked it out by a hair. This is a real close second. Beneath the Darkness, 2011. After watching their best friend get murdered, a group of teens struggle to expose a local hero. I want to emphasize hero. He's only a hero because he used to play high school football. As the vicious killer and keep from becoming his next victims. Starring Dennis Quaid, who's just...
Mm.
Questionable at best.
At best,
I think.
Yeah.
Matt, why don't you go ahead and start this one off?
Yeah. I didn't take too many notes on this. This was really a difficult watch. It does look way better than it should, like most of these. Again, I all of these, I don't know what it is, but I think once we switch to digital, it's just so much easier to make a movie look good, and so. Which kind of hurts it in terms of ever being a cult classic because they look too glossy in order to really, you know, you need a little crust and a little grain for a cult classic. But why would the police not believe these kids when they said that he had his dead body up there or when they said that he stomped on the guy's face? Why wouldn't the police believe? I mean, the police would need to at least investigate that if all three kids are accusing. So, and they don't really, the kids don't really get in much trouble either. So if they thought that they actually broke in, you know, it would seem like they should have been in more trouble.
Somebody died.
Yeah, right. Yeah. A kid was killed.
Yeah.
This was horror. I mean, I know horror movies are known
You're not
going to
check the attic?
Right. I know horror movies are. Yeah, exactly. I know horror movies are known for shoddy police work, but this is, I mean, it's got to be, you know, something somewhat believable. It was like this movie was written by an eighth grader. Really? That's what it feels like.
Hang on. I'm going to check.
It might have been.
Don't look up the director, Joe. Don't do it because I did.
One of my notes is, "Oh, for God's sake!" I wish I'd said what I'd written down what I meant by that, but it was just a note. There's also at some point, it's like midnight, and there's a marching band walking down the street, and there's like a parade going on, and it's middle. It had to be like midnight because a whole bunch of shit has gone on, but by this time. Why did they go through an elaborate plan to break the kid out of the hospital? You know, the quarterback goes through this whole ruse where he's trying to distract the cop who's guarding the room Why? Why not? Why did the quarterback just go look for the missing girl? Why did they have to break out a guy who's already injured and arrested and take the chance of both of them getting arrested? Then neither of them would. It was just so stupid. Obviously, they wanted the star, I guess, of the movie to be the one to find the girl, but it's ridiculous. There might be, you know, based on Dennis Quaid's performance, there might be a campy B movie here somewhere. But again, this is one of those that it's just trying. It's really trying to take itself seriously. It really wants to be scary. For me to hate a movie with this cool of a fall setting is quite a thing. I'm pretty forgiving. If a movie has a really good fall setting, I'm pretty forgiving. And no. And then at the end, when he breaks the fourth wall, oh my God. Oh my God. Just awful, awful, awful.
Cinematic excellence. Really.
I think
it's a brave choice.
It Jesus. Is a brave choice. I think this was...
That's him giving up, man. That's Dennis Quaid giving up.
Right, yeah, no. This might have been I think it was my least favorite of this bunch. It's hard to say because they're all really bad, but this was probably my least favorite.
I think they cast the wrong Quaid. This one should have went to Randy.
Randy, yeah, it might have been better.
Oh, yes, Joe.
That wouldn't have made this a good movie, but it would have been more believable with Randy in that role. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So that's all I've got.
I want to point out that Travis, who's supposed to be mowing the lawn of this funeral home, he gets yelled at by Dennis Quaid that he didn't mow it short enough. And as they're walking from the backyard to the front, you can barely see the yard that they're referring to. It's all dirt. It's like he's got twigs. The blade so far down. He's just mulching the dirt now.
Yeah.
These four friends have a really odd dynamic making fun of each other. Although the one kid, his sister died like 6 years ago and he still can't seem to get over it.
How did she die? Because I don't remember how she died. How did his sister die?
I don't know that I cared.
I know.
I don't remember. And having this whole, so you run a funeral home, okay? There's going to be people coming in for visitations at your funeral home. It's not a coroner's office. It's a funeral home. So you really mean to think that you're going to be able to pass off a giant hole in your backyard with a coffin sunk in it with just a tarp laying over the top of it.
No kidding.
The cops that are walking, oh, what do you got in there? You know, there's no excuse for any cop to just bend over and lift it up.
And all they want to do is see what the tarp is made of. Come on. Nobody cares.
He's feeling the tarp.
All right.
After there was just a death at the funeral, some high school kid died.
Yeah, terrible.
And I have this strange feeling that that kid that died in the funeral home, eventually he will have to go to a coroner's office. And a coroner should be able to tell the difference between some kid who got his head stomped in and some kid that fell down the stairs.
Yeah.
Thank you.
That should be like something that they handle on the first day of that school. So, yeah. This is Mark. Go ahead. Finish it off.
Yeah. I really like this movie.
Shut up.
No. There are,
you would.
No. There are parts in this film that I actually did enjoy, believe it or not.
Name four.
I didn't write it down. I thought the acting was okay, one. Two. All right, you're right. You're right. No. Yeah. Okay. No, all right. Look. It had kind of I don't even know. Look,
that's so great. That's wonderful.
Listen, shut up.
It's a piece of garbage. You don't have to.
Yeah, you don't have to talk.
I'm not trying to defend it, but it's. I thought it was better than Cabin Fever. I thought it was better than Beneath the Darkness. No, not that. No, I thought it was better than.
It was better than itself.
I thought it was better than Cabin Fever and the Disappointment Room. I thought it was kind of a well put together film. Thought the acting was okay. The quarterback, the football scene. I mean, I didn't write many notes on it. But the quarterback.
The football field has no yard markers on it.
Yes, I saw.
They did not paint the field.
There goes that. No, yeah. But yeah, no, it's true. That and the quarterback, you know, maybe have a quarterback in a small town actually teach the actor how to hold a football before he's going to throw. Holy shit. That was atrocious. It, like, in the pocket. Oh, my God. Justin Fields. One of my biggest things was this. It was that, so your son is killed by the coroner, and you're going to send your kid to the coroner. I know it's a small town, but you're going to have him work on your son. That just like mystified me. I was just like, I wouldn't do that. I know it's a small town, but that's just creepy. And then he's like, you know, at the funeral by his car, you know, just, you know, smoking his e-cigarette, which was kind of a weird choice, but was e-cigarettes like really big back then? I was like, what? But he's at the funeral, whatnot. It was just weird. That didn't make any sense. Here's the funny thing at the very end of this film where he says, love sucks. And he looks in the camera and says, love sucks. Mm-hmm. He says, love sucks, right?
Something like that. Yeah.
Something like that.
Yeah.
I did research. I start watching behind the scenes of this film, Beneath the Darkness. The interviewer asked, Dennis Quaid was in an interview for this film and was asked, how do you get in touch with that dark side? And Dennis Quaid goes, oh, well, you don't overdo it. Completely does. I mean, it's on YouTube. And I'm just like, oh, no. He completely overdid it. And he was like, and you're going, well, why did you take this role? Because he took this role right after he played Clinton, Primary Colors, I believe. And he took this role right afterwards, I believe.
No, Clinton was played by John Travolta in Primary Colors.
No, but he played but Dennis Quaid did play Clinton in some film, not Primary Colors, but he did play some Bill Clinton role. But this was the one right after. And he's going, so you played Bill Clinton. Why did you play this role? He's going, I do it for the people. I do it for the people. And I'm just like, what does that even mean? It's like, just you're just slumming it, or I don't know. The film's better than two other films that I absolutely hate. So thanks, Joe. Thanks.
Well, Joe, that was
happy to help.
That was a series of picks.
Yeah.
Actually, Mark, the film you're referring to is called The Special Relationship.
Yeah. Okay.
That Dennis Quaid played Bill Clinton.
Yeah.
That was in 2010, a dramatization that traces former UK Prime Minister Tony Blair's relationship with Bill Clinton and George W. Bush.
So that was a film before he did this film.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
He was an Emmy and he was Emmy nominated.
For what?
Actor.
For what?
I don't care.
Jaws 3?
I don't know. Probably. Yeah.
Dreamscape.
There you have it.
All right, Joe. Thank you so much. I'm gonna clap for this one being over. It's all over now. So our next pick is Mark Piscitelli's.
For the record, I hate myself for picking these.
Well,
they were terrible.
Yeah.
Yeah. Fuck you, Joe. That's what I just said.
So, Mark, what is the pick of your next movies? And tell us about them.
I haven't picked one in a while.
It was Brian's. Yeah.
Well, Brian
Trucker Bomb.
The last one I did was Texas Chainsaw Massacre. So I decided to do the second half of the Texas Chainsaw Massacre. No, I didn't. But we are kind of in that genre. We're going Western horror.
All right.
This is where you put the crickets in.
We're doing Western horror. I got some picks.
All right, let's hear what they are.
All right, let's hear those picks.
Well, I told you guys. You guys kind of knew that I was going to do Western horror through the CineScare chat, and you guys both said Bone Tomahawk. So we are doing Bone Tomahawk.
Thank God. We were both
okay.
We were
waiting
terrified.
With bated breath.
We got a little nervous there.
2015. You can watch this on Tubi. It's free. You can watch it. I think on some other streaming devices too. But Tubi is free.
Services.
Yes. The second pick.
Services.
The second one is the 1999, and I've been dying for you guys to watch this film. I don't know if you guys have seen this. I saw it in a movie theater. When Matt and I lived in Chicago as roommates, and I always recommended it to him, and I don't know if he's seen it, but I raved about this film to Matt. Ravenous, starring Guy Pearce. You can rent this on Amazon. You can't find it on anything, but you have to rent it on Amazon. Ravenous.
What year is that?
1999.
Yeah, we weren't living together in 1999. We weren't.
I swear to God, we watched that.
No.
All right. Well, I must have recommended
weren't
it
you?
To you.
No, I moved to California in 98.
Oh.
Mm-hmm. Well, he didn't move. He fleed.
Did you tell Mark that you moved?
He fleed.
I set up a mannequin and he didn't know.
There's a mannequin rocking in a chair in the corner.
Dear God.
Matt, we've got to watch this movie.
We got to see it. Come on. Are you drunk?
You're letting me talk a lot.
Man, just drag you. Are you drunk? I'm dragging you across the living room floor.
All right. What's movie number three?
Movie number three is a 1983 Western horror film. It's called Eyes of Fire. It's on Shudder. I watched the trailer. I haven't seen Bone Tomahawk, and I haven't seen Eyes of Fire, but I did watch the trailer, and it looks a lot of fun.
This has almost been in a couple of my picks, so good.
Yeah. Oh, really?
Yeah.
Oh, wonderful. The fourth film is a 1998. I had to put it in. I saw this in the movie theater. It's vampires, guys. It's with it's with James Wood. Mm-hmm. It's with it's with some other actors. Danny Baldwin. God bless it. This is
Cheryl Lee.
It's a fun film, guys, and it's directed by the one and only John Carpenter. So very excited to talk about this film with you guys, especially you, Joe. And the last one, I had to do it, guys. I had to. We've never reviewed it. We talked about it a little bit, but not in its whole entirety. Had to do it. 1996, Dusk Till Dawn. I didn't want to put two vampire films in here, but I had to put Dusk Till Dawn, and there is a disappointment in Matt and Joe's face. Why is
I concur?
Why? Why?
It's a fine movie until we get past Selma Hayek, and then after that, I could care less. The minute I see a vampire, I could care less.
No, it's fine. It's a little on the nose. I was hoping for a something really zingous, but it's fine. It's fine.
Well, I wanted to do the wind, but I reviewed it already, and I think you guys already saw it.
Yeah, I already saw it.
Yeah.
No, it's fine. This is fine.
Is this fine?
It's fine. The other picks are really good, and I don't have a problem with Dust Till Dawn. I like that movie. It's just a little on the nose, but yeah, that's fine. No problem.
Hey, I'm sure
we got to review it sometime.
That's true.
I'm sure all of those movies scored higher than the ones that I just picked.
Well, that's true. Yeah, after Dust Till Dawn's going to look like a damn masterpiece. In fact, we should probably watch it now.
Jesus Christ.
Yeah.
Sort of cleanse the palate.
Yeah, exactly.
Do a commentary right now is going, holy shit, the art direction, man. Robert Rodriguez, man, he really knows how to direct.
Yeah.
Man, Michael Park, that one opening scene where he just cracks his knee.
Every one of these films, I'm just going to picture Randy Quaid as Dennis Quaid as the main character.
Thanks for that, Joe.
That's it. No, I actually like these picks. So this will be good. This will be a fun one to watch. So, yeah.
Yeah, I'm really excited about Bone Tomahawk. I haven't seen that, and I haven't seen Eyes of Fire, but I saw the trailer. I'm telling you, man, that trailer looks fucking insane.
Yeah, I've had people recommend that one.
Bone Tomahawk is something to be excited about.
Yeah, you're gonna. It's a tough one, but you'll enjoy.
That's almost like French Extreme towards the end.
Yeah, it is. Oh, yeah.
Wait, what? Bone Tomahawk?
It's like French Extreme.
Yeah, you'll find out.
Yeah.
Am I kicking my feet up?
Probably.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, there's one scene especially, but yeah.
Wear big shoes.
Yeah.
Fuck.
Yeah. But it's a good one. And it comes, the horror, it comes late. You're almost like, this is a horror movie? You know, but when it comes, it comes.
Well, I love Westerns, so I mean, fuck. I mean, I'll watch a slow burn.
Yeah,
and then horror at the end. That sounds like my kind of cup of tea.
For a Western movie, it's great.
Yeah,
I'm not a fan of Westerns, but I did enjoy the non-horror elements of this film.
Yeah, yeah. All right, good job, Mark. So we'll be looking forward to that. And also, I just want to remind everyone to go to the Pasadena Convention Center this weekend. This episode comes out on Friday. It'll be Saturday and Sunday. Come out and check us out. There's going to be tons of vendors. Actually, the Oblong Box Shop is going to be there as well. I don't know if she's going to be selling the Boogeyman Company collection shirts that have been posted, but there'll be a lot of horror stuff. And of course, we'll have Vincent DeSanti talking about Never Hike Alone 2. And there's tons of other people selling t-shirts and masks and all kinds of stuff. A lot of horror vendors are going to be there. So it's going to be a lot of fun. So I guess that's it for this time. We'll see you next time.
Good night, everybody.
Fuck you, Joe. They got a hole in the front. I'm going to have a little feces. I'll let you guys pop off on this. Da, 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 da.